Bear have nests, and foxes have holes, but the Son of Man hath not where to lay his head. You see, those courtesies that came his way were few and far between. But on this occasion, we find that there are those that are providing for Jesus. Notice the people giving these courtesies. Verse 38 here tells us about Martha. He entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. She extended an invitation. She had a home. We know that from the greater context of the gospel accounts that these were friends of Jesus. Jesus was well acquainted with Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Now, we don't really know when that began, when that acquaintance began. I don't know. Maybe it began here. Maybe it began on this occasion where this invitation was given. Maybe not. But we see that Jesus accepted this invitation. He's always surrounded by people, and here was an opportunity for him to come into this house and maybe have a time to sit, to rest, and to be refreshed. And Martha here is a key figure, but she had a sister named Mary. Verse 39 tells us that. And so Mary and Martha were sisters. They lived in this house. Now we know that they also had a brother. His name was Lazarus. It's interesting to me that he's not mentioned in this particular passage. The Bible doesn't tell us about Lazarus here. But we learn from other passages like John chapter 11 that they had a brother. John chapter 11, we find that Lazarus is sick. Mary and Martha sent for Jesus, and they said, "The servant whom you love is sick." Now, Jesus didn't come right away to assist him. He tarried for about 4 days. In the meantime, Lazarus died. When Jesus arrived on the scene, Lazarus had already died, and Jesus raised him from the dead. Now, I assume that Lazarus was present here. It doesn't say that he was, but he at least lived in this home. We notice that the home was in Bethany. Again, not identified here, but we notice from John chapter 11 that they lived in Bethany. And so Jesus was in Bethany at this time and invited into the home of Mary and Martha and Lazarus. These were some of the finest folks of Jesus' day. They were loving people. They were kind people. They were sympathetic to Jesus, and they wanted to help Jesus. They saw all that Jesus did. They saw how that he went about serving others, and their affection for him, as they apparently had become disciples of his, wanted to do all that they could to assist him in his service and in his ministry. You know, that's what good people do. That's what good people in the church do, don't they? We try to help one another. And when there are those that are in need, we come together to help those who are in need. I see a tractor and trailer sitting out here in front of the church building or behind the church building or somewhere around the church building here. I get turned around here. And I think that the purpose of that is to help people who are in need. And as a people, I know that you are involved in helping people who are in need. When tragedy strikes, when hurricanes hit, when flooding happens, when fires take homes, when things happen and people are in need. God's people are loving people. God's people are compassionate people. God's people are generous people.
Amen.
And Mary and Martha and Lazarus were just that kind of people. They wanted to do all the good they could. And here they had the distinct privilege and opportunity that they did not let pass. Sometimes we have opportunities and we let them pass, don't they? Don't we? Sometimes I have failed having an opportunity and maybe not acting on it quick enough, allowed an opportunity to pass where I maybe could have done something good and I failed. They did not do that. They were some of the finest folks that we read about. Their house was always ready to receive Jesus as a guest. Jesus didn't have to pick up his cell phone call head. He didn't have to make a reservation. Whenever Jesus arrived on the scene, it seems as though these folks were always ready to open their door to him. Now, it seems to me that in this text that we find that maybe they did not have a lot of time to prepare for Jesus on this occasion. I don't think they knew that he was coming. I think this was one of those, they extended invitation, Jesus has come. You notice Martha's, she's working very hard trying to prepare, make preparation for Jesus, to serve Jesus here. It appears to me that she hadn't worked for days getting ready for Jesus to come. It appears to me that she didn't have a lot of time to make prior preparation. Jesus is sitting and he is waiting while Martha makes that preparation for his service while he is in that house. But we notice also not only the people giving these courtesies, but let's say something about the price of these courtesies. You know, to do good to others usually comes at some expense. Think of the cost of possessions that we might find involved here. You know, it takes food and it takes all kinds of other supplies to entertain people in your home. You've experienced that. When you open up your home to others and you entertain others in your home, there's always expense that goes with that. There's probably going to be a trip to the grocery store. There are all kinds of things that come into play that maybe sometimes we don't think about. When all said and done, we realize, you know, there's a pretty good bit of expense involved in that. Now, here we find that Jesus is in the home of Mary and Martha, and Martha is preparing a meal for that occasion. I want us to consider the fact that if Jesus' disciples were present, I can only assume that they were. Again, we're not told that here, but I can't imagine them being left somewhere else. When you invite Jesus, you pretty much invite Jesus and his disciples. And if they were present, that means that there were likely at least 16 people in this house. And so we find that Martha is making preparation here to feed on this occasion. Now, I don't know what it would be like to prepare a meal, you know, for 16 people. I've never really done that. I'm not a cook. Now, my wife has done it on lots of occasions. My mother has done it on a lot of occasions. And, you know, they make it look easy, but it's not. You know, it takes time, it takes effort, it takes a lot of hard work. But, you know, it also takes expense. There's food that's being provided for about 16 people here. So there's expense in that. But notice also the cost of peril. I think it's important here that we notice that there were those that were friends of Jesus, and then there were those that wanted to be friends with Jesus but were afraid to be friends with Jesus. Now, why were they afraid? Why did they fear that? Well, it wasn't just peer pressure. There were certain, you know, dangers and difficulties that went along with that. We find that during this time, Jerusalem was a hostile place toward Christ, and there were those there that wanted to kill him. Eventually, they would get that done. But not only is the case that they were hostile toward Jesus, but there's evidence that they were also hostile toward those who were sympathetic and friendly to Jesus. For example, if we go on over to John chapter 12, in John chapter 12 there, beginning in verse 9, listen to what the Bible says. John 12, beginning in verse 9, "Then a great many of the Jews knew that he, that is Jesus, was there. And they came not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might also see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. But the chief priests took counsel that they might also put Lazarus to death, because on account of him, many of the Jews went away and believed in Jesus." Now think about what the record says here. The Bible says that they came not just for Jesus alone, but also they were looking for Lazarus. Now, as we mentioned earlier, in John chapter 11, the record says that Jesus had raised Lazarus from the dead. Now, if you want a demonstration that you are not an ordinary man, if you want a demonstration of the fact that you have the power of God in you, raise somebody from the dead. You know, go to the cemetery and raise the dead. Now, we got people in our world that, you know, they claim to be, you know, spiritual healers and miracle workers, and they claim to heal people. And we know there's a lot of hocus pocus and sleight of hand that goes along in that. But you know, I've never seen any of them raise the dead. They might claim to do a lot of things, but I've never seen, you know, that pretty much sets people apart. Not many people have ever raised someone from the dead. Jesus did so on that occasion. Now, whatever you think about Jesus, you can't deny the fact that he said, roll away that stone, and he took a man who'd been in the grave long enough that his body had already begun to decay, as the sisters of Mary, of Lazarus indicated on that occasion. And Jesus said, Lazarus, come forth. And he came forth from the grave. Jesus said, unbind him and let him loose. And he lived again. Think about what an occasion that was. Imagine if you were there on that occasion, there was great weeping and wailing. They were still mourning the death of Lazarus. And now all of a sudden, that weeping and mourning has turned into rejoicing and exuberation and flat out awe. I mean, this is an unbelievable, this would be a surreal occasion and event that this one comes forth from the tomb. That which was dead is now alive again. And now he's living, he's breathing, and he's walking among the living once again. Don't you think that had a positive impact on a lot of people? Even those who were enemies of Jesus had to acknowledge that a miracle had been done. Now, those who were in authority and power at the time saw Jesus a real threat to themselves, a threat to their power. They didn't understand when Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. It's not a physical kingdom. But they understood that it was. They had a different mentality. And the fact that he was king of the Jews terrified them. And so they wanted to get at Jesus, but they also resented Lazarus. So much so that they wanted to kill him. Jesus had already raised him from the dead, and now he's got people who wants to kill him. Now you've got Mary and Martha inviting Jesus into their home. You see, those who showed kindness to Jesus took the risk of being treated in a hostile way by some others. And so I think it's important for us to notice that as we notice these courtesies that were given to Jesus. But let us notice also the persistency of these courtesies. The family here often showed courtesies to Christ. We find that they did so in this text, John chapter 11, when Lazarus got sick and ultimately died. There were courtesies shown to Christ on that occasion as well. And we find in John chapter 12, that great occasion where Mary came to Jesus. You remember, she knelt at his feet and she anointed his feet with that precious or very expensive ointment. So we see that this is not, you know, something out of the ordinary for these good people. This family often showed courtesies to Jesus. It's evident that they were loyal friends to Jesus Christ. Secondly, this morning, after noticing the courtesies for Christ, let's notice them communing with Christ. That they had this opportunity to have Jesus in their home where they could have close association and fellowship with him. Notice the person in this communing. We find in verse 39 that Martha welcomed him into their house. It was seemingly her idea. She extended this invitation for Jesus to come that they might have a time of fellowship with one another. And the promptness in the communing. Mary wasted no time here as she sat at the feet of Jesus. She is at the feet of Jesus. And what is she doing there? She's listening to every word. We don't find Jesus, but what he's teaching. You know, if he's talking, he's teaching. And Mary hung on every word. With every indication that we have of Mary, she was a deeply spiritual woman. that she was always looking to the spiritual side of things. And whenever Jesus was in the vicinity, whatever it took, she wanted to be in the presence of Jesus. And here, she has the opportunity to have Jesus in their own home, and Jesus is sitting, and where is she? She is sitting at his feet. She is a willing disciple. She is a willing learner of everything that Jesus had to say. And so, when they got to the house, she made a beeline to the feet of Jesus. She didn't waste her opportunities to hear Jesus teaching. Whenever there was an opportunity, she was there. She never allowed that opportunity to pass without taking advantage of it. And you know, that's the way that we ought to be. And that's why you are here this morning, because you have an opportunity. This is the Lord's day, and you've taken seriously the fact that the Lord wants you in this place. You know where the Lord wants you, and that's where you are this morning, right where you are, because you have an opportunity to learn the words of Jesus. In Hebrews 10:25, the Bible tells us that we're not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. And so we see the promptness here. But notice the position of this communing. Mary sat at Jesus' feet. That was not by accident. She was showing her humility and her submission to Jesus by appearing at Jesus' feet. You know, that's where she was often found. Nearly as I know, every time we find the Bible talking about Mary, she's at the same place. She's at the feet of Jesus. That's where she is in this text. You get to John chapter 11 that we've referred to a few moments ago. And when Jesus came on the scene in Bethany, and Martha came out to meet Jesus, and he spoke to her, and he talked to her about the resurrection and believing in the resurrection. And after she, you know, was to depart, Jesus asked for Mary. Where's Mary? And when Martha came to Mary, she said, "The Lord has called for you." And so Mary went out to meet Jesus at the same place Martha had been. And when she got there, you know what she did? She fell to the feet of Jesus. Once again, showing her humility and her submission to Jesus. She loved Jesus, but she fell at his feet on that occasion. And then later on, we find her once again. Again, she came to Jesus. And where is she to be found? She's found at his feet, and she has this precious ointment. And she anoints his feet with that ointment and wiped it with her hair. What a great memorial of this great woman and all that we find about her. The Bible doesn't have a lot to say about her. She's not mentioned a lot. But every time we see her, she's at a very important place. She's at the feet of Jesus. And metaphorically speaking, that's where we ought to be found. Spiritually, we ought to always be willing to be at the feet of Jesus, showing our humility and our submission to him. Here we find them communing with Christ. But thirdly, let us notice the complaining to Christ. Things take a little bit of a turn here in verse 40. We find in verse 40 that the record says, "But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me.'" Now, the problem I have with this verse is that I have the words, but I don't have the voice inflection. Don't you wish that we could hear Martha say these words? Because I think that it makes a difference. How did she say this? When she came to Jesus, what was the tone of her voice? Now, she's obviously upset. Here she is. She's working very feverishly, I assume, in the kitchen here. She is working and she's laboring. And where's Mary, her sister? She's lounging around talking to Jesus. That's the way she sees it. I'm doing all the work and my sister's doing nothing. And so she brings this complaint to Jesus. In her so doing, there's a sense in which she dishonored the Lord. She accused Christ of not caring. Notice what she does. She says, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me alone to serve?" I don't think she meant to do this, but there's an implication in what she's saying. She's implying that the Lord is uncaring about her circumstance, and that could not be further from the truth. There's never a time in my life or your life or Mary or Martha's life that Jesus wasn't concerned about the circumstance in which they or we are in, ever, ever. Whether we're on the mountaintop or we're in the valley, the Lord is with us. He cares for us. He is concerned about us. He has compassion upon us, whatever the circumstance might be. It's never the case that Jesus does not care. You remember when Jesus was asleep in that boat and the disciples were fighting that storm on the Sea of Galilee? Finally, it got so bad they woke him up and they said, "What? Lord, do you care not that we perish?" Again, Jesus may have been sleeping, but he was not unaware of the danger that they were in, and he certainly wasn't about to allow them to perish on that occasion. It was Martha who actually didn't care enough to listen to Christ. Now, I know that she was doing some important things, but Jesus helps her to understand that the things that she was doing was the most important, the things that she was doing was not the most important things that were happening at that time. Ryle says once again, "In so saying, this holy woman sadly forgot who she was and to whom she was speaking." In this moment, at least momentarily, she forgot some things that were very important. Secondly, let's notice that she disrupted the family. How do you think Mary felt about this? It's interesting to me that when she brought this complaint, she didn't bring it to Mary. The record doesn't say anything about her saying anything to Mary. She just went straight to Jesus. You know, that's what children do. You know, when they're tattletales. You know, rather than making a complaint against their brother or sister, what do? They go tattle. They go to mom and dad. Tell them to do this. And she's kind of doing that here. She kind of just goes over the head of Mary. She goes straight to Jesus and takes her complaint to him. Then thirdly, we notice the discredited devotion here. This is a subtle criticism of Mary's devotion to Christ. Her devotion to Christ is obvious here. It is undeniable, and it has to be seen. And yet, we see that she's being criticized by her very own sister for that devotion. Martha implies that Mary's devotion to Christ is the problem here. And that Jesus doesn't care that she's neglecting to help Martha in the kitchen. Those who are devoted to God will be criticized by those who are less devoted. You're a faithful child of God. You know, as well as I do, that along with that, there's going to be some criticism that comes your way because you're a faithful child of God. The very fact that you associate with the Church of Christ in this community is going to cause some people to have certain thoughts and ideas and maybe even prejudices about you or against you just simply because of that, because they associate you with a particular group of people. And you know, people have their ideas about the Church of Christ, do they not? And they say things about people in the Church of Christ. And they already have this preconceived idea about things you believe and things that you would say and things that you would hold to. They know what you believe, or at least they think they do. They think that you think you're the only ones going to heaven. They think that you think a lot of things that maybe we don't think. But they've been told we think that. They've been told we believe things like that. And so, this idea of being devoted to God puts us in a position where there are those less devoted to God will feel free, perhaps, to criticize. Sometimes, elders in the Lord's church have suffered criticism by even members of the church who perhaps are not in a position to know and to understand all the things that go into decisions that elders make. And sometimes those who are the least devoted among us to the Lord, those who are kind of, not so dedicated members who show up here and there and now and then and make an appearance and never a part of the work, seem to be the quickest to criticize the leadership in the church. Maybe you've never experienced anything like that, but I've seen that at times in my years as a member of the body of Christ. Here we have an occasion like that. Someone who's doing good, who is showing and demonstrating what true devotion to the Lord really is, and then in the process is receiving criticism even from a member of the family. And so that leads us to some counseling by Christ. Do I have to a quarter after? Or am I done?
2-minute drive.
Okay, I have 2 minutes?
Yeah.
I can do it. Verses 41 and 42. All right, here's Jesus counseling Martha through this difficult time. And he says to her, Martha, 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 Martha. He didn't just say Martha. He said, you ever do that? You ever do that to someone? What's even worse, someone do it to you. They're pitying you, aren't they? Yeah, Terry, Terry. Usually that means you should have known better than that. But you know, it wasn't just Martha. It was Martha, Martha. Now, I don't know what Martha's tone was, but it may be that she came in and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, why don't you tell her to get up out there and come in here and help me? Now, she may not have done that, I don't know, but I think the possibility is there. She's irritated. And in a moment of irritation, I think her response wasn't maybe what it ought to have been. Let us notice the passion here. That Jesus says, Martha, Martha. And he gets right to the heart of the problem. He says, you are troubled about many things. Now, as I count them here, I only count one. I only count one thing that she's got a problem with. She's got a problem that she's got all this to do, and she's doing it, and Mary's doing none of it. She's got the whole responsibility here of doing it all. But you know, that one problem that she has is really made up of a million little things. It's not the one big thing, it's the million little things. I saw a TV show advertised the other day. It's about friendship, I think. And I think the title of it was A Million Little Things. You know what goes into a friendship? A million little things. Friendship doesn't happen immediately. It comes about as a result of a million little things. And they got me to think it. And here on the other end of that, here Martha's got a problem because she's irritated by a million other things. She she's got the meat cooking, the gravy's burning, and the breads need to come out of the oven, and she's got all this. She didn't have, a microwave and a convection oven, and a blender and a mixer, and she didn't have all that stuff, and she's trying to do that, and at least Mary could set the table. I got to do this, I got to fold the napkins, I got to do all these things. It's a million little things. And finally, the 1,000,001 thing, she has, okay, I'm going to Jesus. Jesus. And she brings that complaint. And his response is, and I believe in a very calm way, a very compassionate way, Martha, Martha, you're troubled by many things, but don't forget the priority. There is one thing that is needed. There's one thing. You see, Mary understands. There are meals that have been cooked. There are meals that will be cooked. There's a lot of things, and there's all kinds of time to do it. But right now is the time to sit at the feet of Jesus. We see the praise. Mary has chosen the good part, the excellence of her choice, the eternality of her choice. Jesus said, this will not be taken away from her. It's not, is it? Here we are 2,000 years later, and what are we doing? We're talking about Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus. She knows the good part. Well, have you and I chosen the good part? Have we obeyed the gospel to become a disciple of Jesus Christ and serve Him faithfully? Or is it the case that we've been distracted by the things of this world that leads us to lose our focus on Jesus? Let us be found sitting at the feet of Jesus. Thank you very much.